Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It's 2 minutes past the hour on the 26th day of May, 2016. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to be part of the madcap merriment, the zany real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Right now, well, folks are a little slow wandering in. Maybe they wonder if I'm going to be on the air. You never know. I mean, good evening, Little Gray. Good evening, Soapbox Geezer. And, of course, both of our inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, are in there, Sparky being a third-stage guild navigator who has folded space to become Man Cave. And more will be along presently, I do presume. We are the Horn is a listener-supported operation. Yes, absolutely. No ads for Swedish mattresses that you can bounce a bowling ball off of and pick up with an Oric vacuum cleaner while listening to your Bose Wave radio and waiting for the hair to grow on your head from your herbal hair growth tonic capsules here. No, we have to. We are self-supporting. In other words, the community keeps it all going. And we do that by trying to raise about, 200 bucks an evening. We came up just a tad short last night in terms of just keeping everything even. So we've got about $250 to go. Thank you very kindly to Sam. Thank you, Sam, for getting us started this evening and taking us down from around 300 bucks. Thank you very kindly indeed. If you want to help out, just go over to headonradionetwork.com, click the tab called Contribute, and, go from there. You need not fill out all the blanks, you know, like where you work and who you work for and all of that stuff. No, we don't want to know that. Don't need to know that. I don't know why PayPal put that in their little plug-in for the web page. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, then you can mail checks and money orders made payable to The Horn to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And if you want to let me know, then I can tell Boss Man Wayne to leave the spider-proof gloves in his truck, and all he has to take with him is his trusty Louisville Slugger in case he runs into a member of the Klan. Because remember, our little UPS store where the mailbox is, well, the Klan has a mailbox there too. And you never want to be around the Klan without a baseball bat or an axe handle or perhaps a flamethrower. You never know. Anyway, so that's how we keep this all going. Hopefully I don't have to mention it again through the course of the evening, who knows? Who knows? Who knows? Let's see. What have we got this evening? Can we start? Steve from Georgia stands back in the room this evening for the second night in a row. Welcome, Steve. Welcome. And there's Trey. Here comes Anatole. See, I told you the room would begin to fill up. We're going to start this Thorn in the Side Thursday, because that's what it is, with a personal thorn in the side to me. One, I'm going to try to get through 3 hours of 3 hours of progressive broadcasting this evening, but I do not guarantee it. Wait, what in the hell? Okay, that's right, that's right. Okay, all better now. Both channels working nicely. Sorry, that just took a second. Well, and the reason I say I don't know if I'll be here for all 3 hours is because I'm not feeling great. I thought my latest flare-up of whatever this fun that I go through periodically with my gut is had flared and gone down, but no, it re-flared. Didn't do a lot of sleeping last night, and I'm a little bit kind of right now from trying to ease the pain, as it were. And you know how I feel about the potential of getting on the air and doing Limbaugh Radio. My friends, there are monkeys flying out of my butt. Or pass me another one of those pills. I can chew it up for the refreshing burst of flavor. Conservatism, my friends. Yeah, you're right. So if I don't, I apologize. But I'll do my very best. We'll get an hour in at the very least. Yes, that's exactly the feeling. Steve from Georgia Stan says, "Oh man, Bob's feeling puny," and that is the right. And I know where you are. You're there in the Appalachians, Steve, just like I am. And yes, feeling puny is exactly. No, I do not have the gouts, Anatole. No, not at all. My toes are fine. This has to do with having bass-ackwards guts, and it's not a lot of fun. But anyway, if I start reciting Jabberwocky, somebody just let me know, okay, please, because I don't like doing Limbaugh Radio. But I said a personal thorn, and that's this. And I don't know what it takes to explain this to the fine folks at Microsoft, but not everybody wants Windows 10. No, some of us can't even use Windows 10 with certain things that we have to have for broadcast purposes. Like me. And so I fire up the Skype runs through a laptop. And I fire it up, and it's not, now Microsoft is not happy just saying, "Hey, we think Windows 10 is great. We think you will too. Here, let us, are you ready for Windows 10? Click here." No, now they've turned it into freaking malware. Your Windows 10 experience will begin in X number of, click here to okay. And people go, "Oh, fuck, okay, if I have to." But if you're in a situation like I am, for instance, Windows 10 is useless at least by my experience, on a 32-bit system. You know, a 32-bit system can't take more than 4 gigs of RAM. Windows 10 is a memory pig pig. And so, there, you know, interfaces I use that, you know, curiously, the manufacturers of the products have not written Windows 10 drivers for, because a lot of our equipment is, you know, what's the word I'm looking for here? Ancient. Right? Yeah. So I don't dare take Windows 10, or then, like, we won't have the Skype line. But there it was on the Skype laptop. Take Windows 10, take Windows 10. And it looks like a fait accompli where it's just going to... And so you've got to look around. And then finally, buried in there is a little link you can click where you can say, no, I don't want Windows 10. Yeah. So, that's, you know, that's kind of where, and it's happening on two machines. The streaming computer, all the poor little thing does is send out a stream. As Peter Godbold once remarked, that poor computer must be suicidally bored. All it does is pass packets. I mean, it never even gets to try to compute the value of pi to the 322nd decimal. It's the computer equivalent of ennui. And it doesn't need Windows 10. Neither does this laptop. But the thing is, these miserable bastards at Microsoft are going to make it harder and harder and harder until one day maybe you walk in, your head's hurting, or, you know, maybe your gut's all screwed up and sideways or something, and you go, okay, and then you got Windows 10. Poor Dr. Bill got stuck with Windows 10 on his laptop. I mean, fortunately, it's a 64-bit system with at least 4 gigs of RAM, and so it wasn't a complete disaster. But it's frustrating as hell. I mean, so much for choice in the alleged free market, right? Yeah, right. It's okay, you know. Windows. I've got it on one computer. Windows 10 is fine if you've got a modern processor and oodles and oodles and oodles of RAM. Now, it's a pain in the ass the way that they've got... See, it's a pain in the ass the way they've got things set up for where you go to find things. And but, well, they have to... You know, they just change things around to be able to justify having a new operating system. So where it was ever so easy, just, you know, click the little start button that used to say start, but you know, anyway, you click it and you go and get my computer, control panel, add, remove programs, whatever, hardware, you know, device mangler, it was all there. But now with Windows 10, you've got to sort of wander around until you finally accidentally cooperate in the Windows 10 experience. And it sucks. So that's my little thorn. Windows 7, I got used to Windows 7. I'm happy with Windows 7. I've got Windows 10 on two machines. Despise it. Yeah. So that's, like I said, that's just my personal thorn. I wish to God that, I mean, if there was one, you know, that Microsoft would just leave me alone about their Windows 10. And I guess, you know, you've got until, and the clock is ticking, you've got until June the 29th to finally knuckle under and accept Windows 10. And after that, well, you know, a couple of years from now, they'll orphan, or maybe a year from now, who knows, they'll orphan Windows 7, and then if you get some god-awful bug or need to reload, you know, you're screwed. Uh-huh. It's almost enough to make you believe in Linux. But who wants to learn a whole nother operating system, for heaven's sakes? So I promise I never know what's going to turn into a thing in terms of conversation in this community. But we'll just leave that be. Thank you very kindly. We are off and running on fundraising for the evening. Thank you very kindly to Reinhard. Thank you, Reinhard. He said, my road trip earlier this month tapped me out, but I got an early okay from Diane to allot my allowance for June. Here's a taste. Wishing your improvement health-wise. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Reinhard. And Reinhard and Charlene have gotten us started so far, and that's quite inspiring because that means we've only got $125 worth of fundraising to do for the remainder of the evening. Thank you both very, very kindly indeed. And again, thanks to Sam at the beginning of the program. That's how we do this. And thank you, Keith. Thank you, Keith, very kindly. That means we're down to $105 to go for fundraising for the program for the evening. What have I got? What do we got this evening? Okay, it's not going to seem like there's a connection, but there's a connection, because I can make it. You know I love ancient history stuff and archaeology stuff. Well, it was quite exciting to see that there has been an announcement out of Greece that a team of archaeologists and other scientists say that they have actually excavated the 2,400-year-old tomb of Aristotle in central Macedonia. Mm-hmm. It was a 20-year exploration of an ancient city called Stagira. That's where Aristotle was born in 384, the father of modern thought, father of logic. And he died in 322 BCE at Chalcis Avia. And it turns out that they took him back home and buried him back home in Stagira. Well, they took his ashes back home, I guess. It's an exciting find, though. Apparently, the Byzantines had destroyed the tomb structure itself and built a square tower over it. Oh, good for you. You may recall that Aristotle was the tutor of Alexander the Great. One might say that he didn't accomplish all he had hoped with Alexander, but still, he left a legacy. He left a legacy. And it was so profound that that the early Christian church felt a need to declare he and Socrates, what was it, Homo Christianicus Naturaliter, the naturally Christian man. He didn't even need Jebus. He could be before Jebus, and somehow was still a Christian. In layman's terms, that's called cheating. But you know the church does that. Now, what is the significance of this in modern terms? Well, we only know what we know about the ancient world by virtue of some writing. Of course, a great deal of it was destroyed by the Christians, and some by others, but largely by the Christians, because they hated anything that that challenged their bizarre death cult Bronze Age worldview. They murdered people who were scientists, who were seeking knowledge, and who refused to bow down to various priests, bishops, archbishops, etc. But we have what we know of the ancient world because of the material artifacts that they left behind and some of their written material. And we've got a reasonably reasonably decent picture of what that ancient world must have been like. At one and the same time, very like us and very different from us. And so from time to time I wonder what the future will make of us when a couple of million years from now, 3, 4, 5, I mean, it's going to be a long time before the sun burns out. And I wonder when that evolved race of 6-foot-tall sentient cockroaches begins going through our civilizational remains, what will they think of us? Well, yesterday we had the lady in, Glenville, New York, Scotia Glenville High School, screaming at children that they watch too much gangster rap on the MTV, and some of them even smoke the marijuanas, and they need Jesus. Ooh, I got a giggle out of Agnes. Agnes is with us in the studio this evening.
Hello, everybody.
See, I told you. And then we had the idiot with the flat Midwestern dialect screaming his fool head off in Target. And last week we had another woman screaming in Target. This is getting serious. And never mind the millions of years from now and the 6 foot tall the race of 6 foot tall sentient cockroach scientists. You know, even 50 years from now, 100 years from now, 25, who knows? But what are we going to say about these reactionary barbarians who, of course, hide behind the mantle of conservatism and Christianity, and whose Christianity is as far from the teachings of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, as you can get and still be on the same planet, and whose doctrine and dogma is far removed from anything that intelligent Christianity recognizes. Well, the dateline for this story is Utah Stan, and a story out of KSL-TV. And it's the story of a full-grown man, once again, not trans, named Christopher Adams. They went shopping on Sunday. And as is the case when one has a 5-year-old kid and a 7-year-old kid, sooner or later they'll say, "Daddy, I gotta go potty." God knows, we've been there. Once upon a time, when we would jump in the family minivan and head south, it would sometimes take us 14 hours to make a 9-hour drive from here to Alabama, because no one child was capable of voiding bladder or bowels at the same time as any other child during the same stop. Well, what are you laughing at? It's true, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's why I made an auto John. Okay,
but it's true.
Yes, it is.
And so, Dad did what, and there, you know, this is why you have things like family restrooms. Because people weird them out over, you know, gender. So Christopher Adams takes his 7-year-old son, Kyler, and his 5-year-old daughter, Emery, into the men's room. At which point they were confronted Let's let Christopher Adams describe it in his own words. He said, "This guy walks in and goes to the bathroom, the urinal. Then he just, like, turns to me and starts freaking out, dropping the F-bomb. And what he was freaking out about was that my daughter was in the men's bathroom." And then he starts shoving Mr. Adams. Mr. Adams tries to get the children away from the right-wing, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, possibly collab-oriented goober. So after he tries to get his children away from the freak, Mr. Adams turns around, at which point the guy sucker punches him and blacks his eye and keeps punching him and then kicks him in the knee. Finally, Mr. Adams shoved his attacker out of the restroom, and he said, "I just slammed him on the ground and just held him until associates from Walmart could get there." Of course, it's Walmart, who has remained silent through all of this, hoping that they're going to reap the benefits of all of those million moms and their each of their $1 purchases. I mean, because you remember the screaming idiot in Target the other day. There's a million moms, and Target has lost $1 million because a million moms are walking in and not buying a pack of gum at Target. Mr. Adams, meanwhile, has probably suffered broken ribs. His knee is severely injured. And meanwhile, I love this line. The city attorney for Clinton, Utah, thank you, goddess of irony, is considering a possible assault charge against the man. Really? An assault charge? How about a battery charge? Because he did commit an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature on the fella. The assault charge, there would theoretically be two assault charges, one for each child who could reasonably have been thought, they were about to receive an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature.
What about child endangerment?
Yes, dear. What about child endangerment? We got a lot of possibilities here. And you know what? There's a direct, bright red line that extends from that freak in that restroom in that Walmart in Clinton, Utah, to Brian Fisher and Sandy Rios and the million moms of Merck and Family Association of Tupelo, Mazzuppistan. And yet we have a legal system that will not allow them to be reached. And that means there's something wrong with our legal system. This is all being instigated by American Family Association, Liberty Council, and all of these gangs of religious thugs who hide behind the skirts of the First Amendment. And if you try to say anything to them, "Oh, you're persecuting me because I love homophobic Jesus." When there's not even an issue of sexuality involved in all of this. But the city attorney's just considering assault charges. And then this, of course, this is a real laugh. Out there in Clinton, Utah, stand behind the Zion curtain. Police encouraged anyone with concerns about what they see in public restrooms to notify store employees or law enforcement rather than physically attack others. Whatever happened to mind your own business? I mean, in this particular fact pattern, the guy is standing at the urinal, taking a leak, and instead of zipping up, going over and washing his hands and getting the hell out of there which is basically what you do in a restroom. You do your thing. You get a quick wash and brush up and a little cold water on the back of the neck and the code, and you get out the door. But he has to stop because we have a freaking religious war brewing in this country. This is just another front in the cold Civil War. And you know what? There will be another one tomorrow. And probably 5 or 6 over the weekend. And in the chat room, Stockton Larry says, Jesus, Bob, that's spelled C-H-E-E-S-U-S, Jesus, Bob, I was a-thinking the children's in Greater Deseret were able to open carry and shit. And that's true. What happens in one of these open carry states or concealed carry states or shoot them if you got them states? I'd love to hear from the NRA on this one. Would Mr. Adams here have been within his rights to pull out his Freedom Protector, scream, Wolverines, and blow the living hell out of the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-to-metalist, amosexual? I mean, we don't know. There was no gunplay involved, mercifully. But in terms of a father defending himself and his children, wouldn't the NRA say that it would have been perfectly okay to shoot this man dead in his tracks? I'm glad the daddy here didn't, Mr. Adams. Because, you know, a lot of tile and stuff. Who knows? Bullets could ricochet. And then we'd have one of those stories where, well, the gun just went off. It's past it's past goofy. We're into We're into dangerous. And of course, here in the last day or so, life has become much more interesting here in almost level west by Cole, Virginia, Stan. Because our little old anybody with a pulse can carry a gun law has gone into effect. Now, maybe you don't, and I'm not going to do it, A, too broke, B, not interested. But if I wanted to, I could just go and buy me a gun and load it up and put one in the chamber and stick it down in my pocket and hope the safety stayed on. And if it didn't, well, thoughts and prayers. Oops, blam, pray. And that applies to every West Virginian non-felon over the age of 21. Don't you feel safe? I don't feel safer. Anybody? Trey in the chat room asking, did the attacker get arrested? No, the attacker did not get arrested. The city attorney is contemplating charges. I mean, the cops came up and were told directly what had happened after Mr. Adams subdued the freak. Guy's got broken ribs and a busted knee. No arrest has been made. Anybody want to guess what this protector of religious liberty will get in the way of bond if he should happen to be arrested? Maybe a $500 PR bond where he just signs and promises not to harangue any more people in the restroom? So one wonders. One wonders what the history will be of this place. But it is, it's thorn in the side Thursday. And to the extent that, you know, I mean, this guy basically in Utah is getting rewarded by virtue of the fact that he's not cooling his heels in a jail cell for so much as a minute. He's being rewarded for assaulting a man and his two little children in a restroom. Battering a man and assaulting his two little children in a restroom. And that's kind of a trend here in what I think we've identified in the last couple of days as the United States of assholes. Consider for a moment Lieutenant Robert Jaworski. Lieutenant Robert Jaworski was an officer with the El Paso County Sheriff's Office. El Paso County is in Colorado, not Texas. Lieutenant Robert Jaworski is a racist. One day, with other members of the department around and members of the county coroner's office, there in the sheriff's office break room, the TV was on and they ran a clip of President Obama. At which point in time, Lieutenant Robert Jaworski uttered a phrase involving what we euphemistically refer to as the N-word. You can figure it out for yourself. You know, TV, I'm sure it was on Fox News, clip of President Obama, and Lieutenant Jaworski says, that! And I don't even like to use the word. And we all know what word I'm talking about. Well, upon inquiry, Sheriff Bill Elder said, well, I would have fired him if he hadn't voluntarily retired, because he did. Sheriff Elder said, that is unacceptable in my administration. You wouldn't get a warning as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. And so he's been rewarded, Lieutenant Jaworski has, with full retirement benefits. Full retirement benefits for his 28 years of dedicated racist service to the El Paso County, Colorado Sheriff's Department. I'm sure that Lieutenant Jaworski is quite upset that his life has been intruded upon and he's been imposed upon by political correctness. Because that's what this is, right? In an attempt to do some butt covering, El Paso, Colorado County Deputy Attorney Elizabeth A. Kirkman said, there was no settlement, no use of public dollars, or any legal consideration given in return for the retirement. Because, you know, it's not a crime just to begin shrieking racist epithets at the mere appearance of the President of the United States on a TV screen. Because Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe, under God. Mm-hmm. So we got that going for us. Now, this could be a very busy evening. Speaking of racist cops, though, let's run from Colorado over to Ohio, Stan. Ohio. Something similar. More similar than you'd care to admit. There were some recordings made back in 2013 by a deputy with the Hocking County, Ohio Sheriff's Department. A deputy made the recordings of some of his brother officers and the recordings feature a pair of deputies named Patrick Allison and Edwin Downs, who, again, we'll just use the euphemism, who used that word that has two G's, an E, an N, an I, and an R, and isn't ginger. They used that word 8 times during an on-duty conversation that took place in regard to the 2012 slaughter of young Trayvon Martin by George Zimmerman. In that conversation, deputies Allison and Downs were joshing about how they could build and sell portable crosses. We should make a little money. They ought to pay us to burn crosses in neighborhoods. We could sell portable crosses, like have a wood cross with the base so you could just stand it in the yard instead of having to dig a hole for it. It could have, like, fire starter chunks built into it. And then the two deputies are, ha, 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 oh, that is a funny one. Ha, 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 portable crosses, ha, 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 with fire starter chunks and, ha, 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 ha. Now, that was in 2013. The sheriff of Hocking County, one Lanny North, had only found out about those recordings 4 months ago. In January 2016. Because the recordings were used as evidence by the attorney for former coroner David Cummin. David Cummin, meanwhile, had accused Sheriff North and a number of deputies, as well as prosecutor Lyena Featherolf, of malicious prosecution, intimidation of a public official, and violating Ohio's open meeting laws. And that came out, the recording came out in discovery. Responding to the recordings, Sheriff North says, "It seems to be an isolated incident. They did violate our code of conduct." But he went on to say that after he heard the recordings, he had counseled deputies Allison and Downs. Now, fellows, I don't want to hear you using the N-word where anybody can hear you use it ever again. And remember, sometimes other people have tape recorders in their pockets or telephones that will record things. So you want to make sure when you're using the N-word that it doesn't get recorded. Not a bad idea about those portable crosses, though, I tell you what. You two, you got the entrepreneurial spirit that drives this nation is what you got. And also, a lawyer hired by the county recommended that Deputies Allison and Downs both take a one-hour online class on cultural diversity provided by Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine. And Sheriff North said they sure did take it.
A whole hour-long course to change life.
And once again, 55-year-old Deputy Allison retired in 2014 after 26 years on the force. Well, he got rehired after he retired, and then he re-retired after the recordings came out. Meanwhile, Sheriff North continued and said, "Well, they're human, and they have the right to express their freedom of speech, but there's a time and place to do that, but the time and place is not in the office in uniform." So when is the time and place, please tell me, when is the time and place for mocking the killing of a teenage young black man by talking about how much money you could make selling portable crosses for burning, presumably in black folks' yards? 98% of Hocking County's 29,380 residents are white. One might say that Hocking County is sort of a default sundown county. But I really would love to know. Well, okay, there's a time and a place. And the time and the place is apparently at your local Clavern meeting, when you're sitting around sucking down Keystone Lights with the, you know, with the Grand Kleagle and the Imperial Exalted Dragon Wizard. And Deputy Downs, 41 years old. He's still on the force. Hasn't been disciplined at all. Didn't lose a penny's worth of pay. Nothing. Nada. So we got that going here in the United States of Assholes. Oh, what else? What else? Because we got lots of else. Down Mississippi Stanway. Thorns. These are all just thorns. Just ow! Down Mississippi Stanway, it turns out there's a humongous cheating scandal in standardized testing because of the amount and degree to which we attach critical importance to those idiotic, stress-laden tests. I'm not telling tales out of school. Hi, see what I did there? When I say that the annual standardized tests are going on here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, right now. And, of course, we've got three precious little grandchildren, two of whom, I mean, can you imagine you start doing this to children when they're in, what, first, second grade? Is it second grade when it starts? And our eldest, who is a very responsible little girl, is worried. She's very worried that she did not get enough right answers on the West test. And, of course, because jobs and the ability to pay bills and eat food and not live on the streets is attached to test performance for the teachers who administer them, bad things can happen. This could conceivably have just as easily been a prayer meeting Wednesday story, but it's pretty thorny, too, really. LaWanda Tyler Jones is the principal at Heidelberg Elementary School in Clarksdale, Mississippi, Stan, or was. Again, back in 2013, these things take time to uncover. Walt Drane, D-R-A-N-E, is in charge of overseeing student accountability, whatever the hell that means, for the Mississippi Stan Department of Education. The state of Mississippi Stan spent $246,000 investigating its standardized test scores because, among other things, there was a sudden increase in test scores at Heidelberg Elementary School in Clarksdale, again, back in 2013, where LaWanda Tyler Jones was principal. And when Mr. Drane interviewed her about those increased test scores, and you know, we don't just assume that maybe children is learning things. I mean, remember what Dim Leader asked. The great question we have to ask is our children learning? Mm-hmm. Well, he interviewed Principal LaWanda Tyler Jones. And she said, and the reason she gave for the test scores going up was that before the test, and one wonders just how credulous and gullible Mr. Drane is. Well, this is a quote. She indicated to me during an interview that she anointed the desks, the pencils, the doorways, and also the students' heads with holy water. And he said I just took it. I took it at face value. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, clearly anointing desks and pencils and walls and little youngins' heads with holy water. Well, sure, that could make test scores go up. I mean, yeah, because God. I mean, just because praying right before an algebra test in high school that I had never studied for never resulted in me getting a better algebra test score doesn't mean that a little holy water and you know, on the back of the neck and the code won't make your test scores go up. But it got to be a little bit dodgy when the state realized that not only were the test scores going up, a lot of the answers was the same. Of course, this begs the question of, if they're getting the right answers, aren't the answers going to be the same? I mean, are there six or seven right answers in the Mississippi? Well, you know, there probably are. I mean, for instance, maybe there's a question about how did life come to be on planet Earth, and one answer is Genesis and God and talking snakes, and the other is, and this is the one that'll get you sent to hell, evolution. Yeah. Then Mr. Drain, who initially believed Ms. Tyler Jones when she was talking about all that anointing she was doing, he interviewed some other staff members there at Heidelberg Elementary School in Clarksdale. They said that she was telling folks to coach students and change their responses while taking the test, which means that, well, the grown-ups were getting shit wrong. The grown-ups can't pass their own test.
I have that problem often.
Oopsie. Then there was the local investigation by local superintendent Dennis Dupree, who found that no violations had taken place. Again, which Mr. Drain took at face value. At this point in time, however, Mr. Drain is a little bit flummoxed. He says, this instance was the first time, to my knowledge, that the state's ever been involved in anything that was so systemic. A lot of times, internal investigations produce evidence against an educator, and we'll have hearings like we're having today, and we'll take people's licenses and drive on. I've never been involved in a case where a superintendent lied before on affidavits. Well, imagine that, lying when one's very livelihood is involved. Don't worry, America, that's just Mississippi Stan, right? Well, Brother Gerald's not okay now. Brother Gerald simply says, holy water, you're fucking kidding me, right? No, I'm not kidding you. Holy water. Holy water on the pencils. I guess there's no holy water on the test sheets, because if you take your nice sharp number 2 pencil and you start trying to fill in the little ovals on the holy water test sheet, you're probably going to just rub a hole in it, and your answer will probably be considered wrong.
But I thought you weren't able to have lead-based pencils in school anymore.
Well, there's no lead in pencils anymore, dear. It's just
it's in the holy water.
It's graphite and Madagascar clay, I think. Just like they rub down the baseballs with Delaware River mud, so I was always told. Well, thank you very kindly to Ron in the I presume thawing out north. 48 KB feed sounds great in Ottawa, he says. Thank you, Ron, for checking in. Ron's been right under the weather lately. The bug that he picked up in the sandbox apparently came home with him.
Feel better soon, Ron.
He said horse pills filled with amoxicillin, a nasal spray that requires a prescription signed by 2 doctors, and almost 2 weeks of letting this crap build up has sapped my immune system to the point where I'm starting to think I'm no longer immortal. Not saying I've passed my best before date, but I have no doubt that I'm in the second half of my race through this incarnation. Now, Ron, you got to maintain a positive outlook here. But you have my complete sympathy as someone who is sitting here broadcasting with his innards apparently tied in knots that would put a yachtsman to shame. But it's good to know the 48. I hope we're slowly sorting out the issues with the feed. I haven't had any notes whatsoever from anybody about having problems with the feed this evening. So I cannot tell you how thrilled I am. Thanks to Steve in Georgia, Stan, for kicking in this evening. He says, Bob, I sent you sick pay. You deserve something for showing up. We appreciate you, my friend. Well, thank you, Steve. I don't like not being here. If there's any way for me to get behind the microphone, I'm going to do it, because the idea of just kind of sitting there in the bedroom and watching documentaries or whatever, while I know damn good and well that I should be back here, well, it just doesn't it just doesn't sit well with me. Meanwhile. Because we have a trinity of Steves, we have another note from another Steve. Subject line, micro shit. Remember, I'm just waking up over here. Windows. imagine now a world without it. But it's a perfect example of a basic engineering principle. The more complex a system is, the more frequent the breakdowns and obscure the solutions. Think of the Wright Brothers airplane. Bicycle with cute little sewing machine motor and wings made of sticks and wire. Work of art. Or the lunar module. An engineer's optimum of design and efficiency and something you could never conceive of without working on the real problem. Also a little bit of a weird dream. But Microsoft and their evolving complications and improvements, that's perfect consumer capitalism. Yeah, because there are, and we're the rubes, I guess. Regards, Steve, in China. Going back to Aristotle being the Homo Christianicus Naturaliter, Ron in Raleigh points out, isn't that sort of like Christians before Christ? Isn't that like Mormons retroactively baptizing people? Where do you think Joseph Smith got the idea? Yeah. Some sympathizing going on. A note coming in from Heather. Hi. Hi, Heather. Icky feeling here last night. Headache from hell. I felt better later, but hate that you're feeling bad. I do, too. I do, too, indeed, because, well, among other things, they've got this thing going on over in Fayetteville now in our cute, funky little community called Gather in the Gorge, and it happens on the fourth Thursdays of every month during the season, and this is the second one, and I'm going to miss it, too, because I'm just not quite up to it. So, anyway, we're right at $100 to go, I think, in fundraising. Forgive me if I'm wrong. But, yeah, I'm pretty sure we're right at $100. And, you know, 5 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 100, 2 at 50, 4 at 20, 5. 5 at 20. You get the idea. And we'll have that sorted out. So, follow-up from Ron in the hopefully not squishy, sort of solidified North. The nice lady doctor gave me holy hell for taking so long to show up for a visit. What is it with you men? I complimented her for being so good at channeling my first wife. I suspect that will prove to be a mistake. Yeah, that's, there will probably be several different unpleasant examinations in your future. Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead and take our break. Top of the hour. Lines are open. The stress line, of course, is area code 304-663-4676. And it seems to be working quite nicely, thank you very much. And, of course, the other line is 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. And from anywhere on this planet, this sweet little blue-green marble time machine hurtling through the universe, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Right? Right. And you can jump in any way you care to. I was thinking about, I was sitting there thinking about Superintendent Dupree, and it seemed like this was the perfect bumper for it. This is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn, Conversation Radio. Light them up if you want to. I'm Rat Chair. I'm Bob Kincaid.
How about watching her wax her skis. On Saturday night, she walked in with a date. Backs him up against the wall. I tumbled off the couch and heard myself sing in a voice I never knew I had before. Oh, honey, how you've grown like a rose. Well, we used to play when we were three. How about a kiss for your cousin Dupree? How about a kiss for your cousin Dupree? I teach you everything I know. If you teach me how to do life is short and quid pro quo. And what's so strange about a down-home family
Good God, that song's creepy, isn't it? But, well, somehow or another, it seems to sort of, work with some of the material we've got this evening. For instance, a story coming from the Toledo Blade, our second Ohio story of this Thorn in the Side Thursday. This is real icky. Once again, there's an angle here regarding the national freakout over restrooms. Have you noticed a trend here? Most of the problems being created over who goes where to the restroom are being created by the people who object to people going to the restroom. The people doing the freaking out are the people creating the problems. This is the story of Eston Saboro and his daddy, Timothy Saboro. Mm-hmm. Among other things, ...27-year-old Eston Saboro's Facebook page shows that he's a big fan of Donald T. Rump, and he has a hit, and he's in mid hissy over trans people going to restrooms that correspond with, you know, their gender identity. Mm-hmm. Eston Saboro posted on Facebook, "For those unaware, Target will be allowing men in the girls' restrooms of its stores and will also allow women in the boys' restrooms of its stores, all to support queerism and confusion." He posted that on May the 10th. Mm-hmm. Father and son are worried about, among other things, satanic symbolism on the packaging of Monster Energy beverages. They're worried about satanic influence in a local church. Well, at the same time they were freaking out with where people go potty, a neighbor spotted a little girl and the little girl was carrying a number of bags. The neighbor thought she was a runaway, but after talking to her a little while, she found out that the little girl was the daughter of Timothy Saboro, whose brother is a big T-Rump fan and worried about queerism. Well, the girl, 13, had managed to escape from her basement of her home, where she had been chained up by her wrists to a support beam in the ceiling for over a year as punishment for bedwetting. Timothy and Eston Saboro were both charged with kidnapping and child endangerment. Turns out the little girl had lived with her father since her mama left her and two siblings and ran off to Las Vegas. Her daddy left her chained for as long as a year. He'll be voting for, probably not now because he's, unless he's convicted of the felony before Election Day, he'll have the right to vote for Trump. During the year that she was chained to the support beam in the basement, he fed her spoiled scraps of food and forced her to use a bucket of ammonia as a toilet. At least there was no transgenders using her ammonia bucket too. Lucas County, Ohio Children's Services had investigated back in 2014 when they saw the little girl eating French fries out of a garbage can in the park. But the Lucas County Children's Services investigators found no signs of abuse in the home, and they said, well, you can just stay here. They've finally been placed in foster care because law enforcement sort of arrested Eston and Timothy Saboro. Mm-hmm. The 13-year-old little girl has not been to a public school since she was in first grade because, of course, the children were homeschooled. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Timothy Saboro, daddy, says, she just didn't want to do things with us. She just didn't. I don't know why. I can't answer that. I love her, and I loved her for her. I didn't think anything less. I miss my babies with all my heart. I want them to do right. That's the way they were raised. If they have any questions, all they have to do is open the Bible, and they will have all the answers. Ecce homo. Did I tell you this was going to be a busy evening? Yeah. Had a note earlier in the day. From our buddy Steve in New York. In regard to something that I said, what, Tuesday maybe? I'm listening to the podcast, Steve writes, where you talked about the government seeking the death penalty for Dylann Roof. I'd like to join in your consternation. However, I fully accept that having not had a loved one whom someone murdered, I'm often skeptical at my own consternation. I'd like to think if the situation presented itself to me, I would feel the same way. The reasons you cited for being against the death penalty are spot on. I don't like having someone killed in my name. I even had a problem with the killing of Osama bin Laden, and particularly the gloating joy that so many seem to show at that. There are the litany of reasons to be against the death penalty. It doesn't do justice because it doesn't right anything, because there's nothing but an additional dead person. Nobody comes back. However, and again, I do not like to wear my religion on my sleeve, and I would never use this as a policy justification for banning it because there are so many secular ones, but I would like to think that a person can feel remorse and experience redemption, let that mean anything anyone wants it to mean, but I mean it here in the religious sense. Particularly when there is a man like this, so young, the notion of not even allowing him the opportunity for redemption seems cruel, and speaking to the Christianists out there, decidedly unchristian. Be all that as it may, I completely agree with you that I don't want it done in my name. It does nothing other than cause another family pain from the loss of a loved one. It snuffs out any chance of redemption. Some Christian country, huh? Fundamentally, acting out of revenge seems so barbaric. I'd like to think that as humans, we can cast off our desires for revenge and replace them with justice and compassion, even for people like Dylann Roof. I mean, wouldn't it really demonstrate that we as a society are better than the person committing those crimes if we could collectively say, we're not going to let you bring the worst out in us? We're not going to be like you. With kind regards, Steve in New York. And all of it is very well taken. And in a sort of, validation of my own position, because I said in regard to the government's declaration, the federal government's declaration, that they intended to exact retributive murder upon Dylann Roof, that I was not going to stop being who I am for any particular individual case. You might recall that when he was arraigned, the families of the victims forgave Dylann Roof. Well, the families might have forgiven him, but apparently the government of We the People is not so easily swayed. But like I said, I got some validation. Bernie Sanders is continuing to walk the walk. Sanders spokesman Michael Briggs told the Huffington Post, Senator Sanders opposes the death penalty. He believes those who are convicted of the most horrible crimes should be imprisoned for the rest of their lives without possibility of parole. So he, too, is remaining true to his principles. We might recall that Hillary Clinton remains a proponent of the death penalty. One of those things that kind of makes you go, nope, not a progressive, not liberal. But it was personally comforting. I think that's the word I'm looking for. To see that Senator Sanders is being true to his personal philosophy. And of course, I'm sick of the presidential race. I'm sick. And so I like finding other things to talk about. But there's no getting around it. Today, T-Rump, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, clinched the Republican delegate count for being his party's nominee for president. And if the Democratic Party persists in its determination to nominate Hillary Clinton, likely the future president of the United States. Steve sent me a note. Steve in New York sent me a note earlier today. I hate to rub it in, but haven't we been saying this since day one? Donald Trump, a story from the Washington Post by Stephen Olemacher and Jonathan Lemire. Donald Trump reached the number of delegates needed to clinch the Republican nomination for president Thursday, completing an unlikely rise that has upended the political landscape and set the stage for a bitter fall campaign. The good news for Trump, reported by the Associated Press after a nationwide survey of unbound delegates, was tempered by continuing problems for his campaign. Those include yada, 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 yada. So what? But, yeah. He's the guy. There's not going to be any backroom deals or anything like that. He's the nominee. Marty with a question about the death penalty. So someone needs to explain to me how life without parole is less cruel than capital punishment. It's not a question of cruelty to me. It's a question of taking someone out of society without doing further evil. Meanwhile, speaking of taking someone out of society, from right here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, the Gazette reporting today in a story by Jared Casto, an assistant Boy Scout troop leader accused of using social media to solicit explicit material from three members of his Kanawha County troop was arrested today. Kevin Michael Rozier, age 39, of Sissonville, arraigned Thursday on three felony counts of soliciting a minor using a computer. Accused of sending explicit photos and or videos of himself to three 15-year-old boys and asking them to send him explicit photos or videos according to a criminal complaint. Yada, yada, yada. Boy Scout Buckskin Council in Charleston issued a complaint Tuesday to the Kanawha County Sheriff's Office. The prosecutor's office asked that he be held on $100,000 bail with conditions that he be under home confinement and have no contact with minors if he is granted bail, including his own children. Mm-hmm. You can always tell when a lawyer's got a tough case. The defense lawyer for this alleged child predator said, "There's no allegation of any physical contact between my client and the victims, and $100,000 is very substantial. Kanawha County Magistrate Pete Lopez set his bail of this man accused of soliciting kiddie porn at $50,000 property value or 10% cash. Again, not a trans person. Not a gay person. A child sexual predator. Mm-hmm. Yes. We are the USA. Oh, we're just kind of bouncing around here. I may knock off here in a few minutes because I think I'm just going to have to punt and go with something that would otherwise produce Limbaugh Radio.
Now, Bob, you have a nurse on duty.
What a surprise. Hold on here. No, you know, down in Texas, they are quite Siri, greetings to the Lady Agnes, courtesy of Marty.
Hi, Marty.
They're quite serious about their football. And so lo and behold, Baylor University, after having problems with some of their student athletes getting all rapey, lo and behold, Baylor University actually fired their head football coach today. And among other things, Ken Starr, you remember Ken Starr, the man who was so very concerned, the flag is falling! So very concerned with consensual sex acts between adults. Ken Starr just kind of sat on his hands while members of the athletic department got all rapey. And he got canned, too. He's stepping down. He'll step down from his position on May 31st. But they're going to let him stay as a professor in the law school. Oh, well, teaching what? Ethics?
How to get by with rape.
He's going to, his new focus as chancellor will be to go out and talk about fundraising for Baylor and, you know, religious liberty. Mm-hmm.
Wait, so rape is a religious liberty?
Yeah, the guy who blinked at, who kind of winked at rape is going to go talk about religious liberty, you know, so that the homosexuals can't get married.
Also, we're going back to the Old
Yes.
Testament.
Oh, okay. And some of this has to do with a football player by the name of Sam Ukwachu. He was a transfer to Baylor. He had been given his walking papers by Boise State because he tended to be a very violent young man. But Baylor didn't, but he had good numbers. And Baylor wasn't particularly interested in any records he might have in Boise there. And a couple of months after he arrived there on the Waco campus, he raped a woman. And as far as Baylor was concerned, he didn't play for the Battling Baptist Bears. But neither the school nor the football program meted out any punishment to him, even though he was charged and indicted for rape by a grand jury in Texas. Football coach Art Briles said, "I like the way we've handled it as a university, an athletic department, and a football program." Then ESPN's Outside the Lines started digging around, and they found almost an even dozen other cases that ran pretty much along the same storyline. The football program and the athletics department in particular were described as having failed to identify and respond to a pattern of sexual violence by a football player and to report of dating violence. Here then is the statement of head football coach Art Briles that he sent out shortly before the sacking. Now, they didn't want to do this because he has two Big 12 championships, and Baylor has never been more successful than they've been. I mean, they went out and built a great big brand new football stadium for Jeebus because of him. Somebody got some explaining to do at the Pearly Gates. Where did I say build a football stadium? This is Coach Briles. Current former players, hurtful to report that there's a release coming out at 11 a.m. and it's to declare that I'm no longer the head football coach at Baylor University. Due to this early release, no, that's what they do in prison. Due to this early release, I'm sorry that I can't talk to y'all in person. It looks the remainder of the staff will stay intact, which is beneficial to y'all. I sincerely appreciate your love, trust, and loyalty. Not a comma in the sentence. Stay strong, comma. Stay motivated, comma. Stay faithful, comma. Love you forever. Hashtag family. Of course, I guess the rape victims weren't part of that hashtag family. Here's part of the report. Football staff conducted their own untrained internal inquiries outside of policy, which improperly discredited complainants and denied them the right to a fair, impartial, and informed investigation, interim measures, or processes promised under university policy. In some cases, internal steps gave the illusion of responsiveness to complainants, but failed to provide a meaningful institutional response under Title IX. Further, because reports were not shared outside of athletics, the university missed critical opportunities to impose appropriate disciplinary action that would have removed offenders from campus and possibly precluded future acts of sexual violence against Baylor students. In some instances, the football program dismissed players for unspecified team violations and assisted them in transferring to other schools. I thought this was a Baptist school, not a Catholic one. That's what you do with Catholic priests who get all rapey. You help them move to another diocese or vicarage or parsonage or whatever where they can keep getting their freak on. As a result, some football coaches and staff abdicated responsibilities under Title IX and Clary to student welfare, to the health and safety of complainants, and to Baylor's institutional values. You know, for a private religious school, there is a shocking absence of Jesus in that statement. Like, for instance, the football staff and the athletic department failed to live up to the teachings of Jesus Christ when he said, "Go ye therefore unto the whole world and don't rape nobody."
They're practicing.
Yeah, never mind.
They're practicing Old Testament here.
Yeah. So, I mean, the idea that Ken Starr gets to, who helped cover all of this up, who delayed and dragged his feet when, you know, when just a couple of decades ago, he had been on fire with religious zeal to get a sneaky peek inside a Bill Clinton zipper. And professed to care so much for Monica Lewinsky. Yeah, not so much at Baylor, huh?
You have to come from the right family here.
Well, or be able to run a 4440.
Yeah, true.
So that's another thorn. Let's see. Did you know that there's an energy bill trying to make its way through the Senate of the United States? The Republican-dominated Senate of the United States? That should be a clue. Mm-hmm. Well, that energy bill making its way through the Senate of the United States is a... Oh, it's just a grab bag of little goodies for the energy company, because, well, Republican senators got bought and stayed bought. Describing the bill, Radha Adhar over to the hopelessly inept Sierra Club said, "This is the legislative equivalent of the middle finger. These lawmakers are obviously not serious about working in a bipartisan way on energy policy." Hey, Radha, come here, buddy. See these three cards? All you got to do, see, I'm just going to move them around on the table. Here, you just put your $10 bill right down over there. I'm just going to move them around. All you got to do is see, there's the queen, okay? I'm going to move them around. See, where's the queen? All you got to do is find the queen. Oh, dang, it's the ace of spades here. You want to play again? It's real easy. I mean, the queen's just right there. See? If. Mm-hmm. Describing the bill... representing Fred Upton, R. Michigan. He said, "This bill is about jobs." Well, shouldn't that be a jobs bill and not an energy bill? "This bill's about jobs. It's about keeping energy affordable. About boosting our energy security here and across the globe. Energy security. Never mind if we don't have a damn drop of water to drink. Energy security." Mm-hmm. Let's see. you remember the Healthy Forests Initiative under a dim leader that allowed for cutting down whole bunches of forests to make them healthy? You know, that's a very healthy forest when there ain't no trees in it. Well, now we have the Resilient Federal Forests Act of 2015, courtesy of the House of Representatives. It would let up to 8 square miles of forest be cut down. On federal lands with no environmental assessment whatsoever.
Really,
Brett Hartle, an endangered species policy director at the Center for Biological Diversity, a good organization, says it basically expedites logging across the entire forest system. Other provisions in the bill, resurrecting the Keystone XL pipeline. Getting rid of protections for the gray wolf. Save the last gray wolf. Send the Sierra Club $15, and we'll send you a canvas messenger bag just like the one John Muir carried into Hetch Hetchy. Only this one will be made by some poor little 12-year-old Chinese person chained to a table in Guangdong Province. Save the last gray wolf. Mr. Hartle continued and said, this legislation now is so eroded down with horrible provisions that it's probably not salvageable. And even if they tried to salvage it, they're not going to get a good deal. It wasn't about protecting the environment first. Oh, for God's sakes, how silly are we? Yeah. Marty asks, so who's the bigger embarrassment to the Baylor alumni? Ken Starr, the rapist you're reading about, the football coach, or Robert Griffin III? Oh, that's cold. And yes, Marty adds, Ken Starr cared about Monica Lewinsky the same way Radio Rwanda cared about Chandra Levy, you know, until Gary Condit lost. That's about how it shakes out. Michigan. Since there was mention of Fred Upton there in Michigan. There's a state lawmaker in Michigan, and this is a troubling case. This is a troubling case. And I'm not sure exactly what the right answer is. There's a state lawmaker in Michigan by the name of Lee Chatfield. He successfully ran for office in 2014 by persistently and relentlessly thumping on the idea of defunding Planned Parenthood. He even went so far as to post a photo of himself holding presumably his precious little baby girl. And he's standing in front of Planned Parenthood. Blue sign says Planned Parenthood care no matter what. And he's standing there with his precious little toddler in his arms. It's just sweet as can be. Got a little bow in her hair. And he's got a homemade sign that says, defend life, defund Planned Parenthood. And we can't have those poors out there getting any mammograms or pap smears or anything. Them poors need to die. Well, he's running for re-election, Lee Chatfield is, and again, he's made a big deal out of Planned Parenthood and defunding it, and, well, he's the mama of the precious little toddler there is a woman by the name of Stephanie Chatfield. And, see, Lee Chatfield kept hooting and hollering about how women don't need to be having no abortions. But it turns out that Stephanie Chatfield had an abortion. Mm-hmm. Stephanie Chatfield said that back when she was in high school, because while she was in high school, she went to a party one night. And when she woke up, she couldn't remember anything that happened that evening. That sounds like a classic case of being drugged or drinking too much or something like that. We don't ask those questions, though. It is not a woman's responsibility not to be raped. It is a man's responsibility not to rape. This is not a difficult calculation. But she said she'd gone to a party while she was in high school, and 3 weeks after she went to the party, she realized that she was pregnant. And she realized when she woke up after the party that she had been, and these were her words, taken advantage of. At the time, she didn't tell her mama nor her daddy, nor any of her friends, about her problem. She was carrying a rape baby. And so she was apparently intelligent enough, and there was enough in the way of resources for her to be able to come up with the money and find a clinic back then, not now. And may I add that she is a white woman and therefore much more likely to be able to find access to reproductive health care. But she found her way to a clinic where she had an abortion. And said that it was because she was raped. She went public with the story, the Associated Press reports, because someone told her husband, good God-fearing, upstanding, Christ-centered, Bible-believing, anti-choice, big government, small uterus, representing Lee Chatfield, that they were going to keep digging, that they'd heard the rumor about her abortion, and they were going to keep digging until they found it. Now, later in life, she says that she told her mama and her daddy and her congressman husband, or, you know, state representing husband, that she had sinned and had an abortion. And the reason I said that this is troubling is that, one, she had no obligation to tell anybody what she was doing. But by the same token, I have been told, because this is something I will never experience, that it's good to have support when one is attending to a reproductive health care need like this. You know why she didn't tell her mama and daddy that she was carrying a rape baby, don't you? Because mama and daddy would have made her have the rape baby. Instead of being supportive of her and maybe mama going in and holding her hand and telling her everything was going to be okay, that it was all right what she was doing, because it was all right what she was doing. It was her constitutional right, just like it's the right of, say, a guy in Mississippi to go and buy a revolver and then accidentally the gun just went off, oops, blam, pray, and shoot his mama in the face. It was her right to have an abortion. But her husband is out there running around the countryside, well, the Michigan countryside, braying on and on and on about how we got to defund the Planned Parenthood. This is commonly referred to as, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, yeah, hypocrisy. And your heart kind of goes out, kind of goes out to her. You know, I consider myself very fortunate to have someone who has been a mentor to me in these issues, like our friend Beth in Dallas, who dedicated her professional career to helping women in just such dire circumstances. How much better would it have been had that woman, as a young woman, had some support and someone loving enough in the way of a parent to say, it's okay, honey. It's okay. You're not ready to be a mama. You didn't want to be a mama. You didn't even actively participate in becoming a mama. There's no reason you should have to be a mama. It'll be all right, honey. It'll be okay. And if you want to pray about it too. Because even the Bible that these people worship doesn't recognize a little clump of tissue, which, by the way, they didn't even have the technology to recognize, doesn't recognize a little clump of tissue as a human being. Their own holy book says that it has to do with God putting the breath of life into the child, which really kind of can't happen out inside the womb. But was it right? And that's the question. And I'm going to wrap up at the top of the hour. And maybe we'll just ponder this until Friday on the front porch. Was it right for someone, for obvious political purposes, motives, reasons, to out her? Or force her to out herself. She said on her Facebook post, "You promised that you would ensure that this story went public. In fact, your desire to see this story go public emboldened me to do something I should have done years ago." And then she admitted, if that is even the right word, because confessed isn't.
No, she just told herself.
She simply stated that she had had an abortion. Was it right for someone to tell her that they were going to tell the world if she didn't? Will it be right now when her when all of her churchy friends come up to her and say, "That's all right, honey, you sinned, but God has forgiven you." Yes, he did. That poor little baby's in heaven. Because you know that's how churchy people are. I take issue with the way the story has been reported in one regard. The story showed up under the byline of Arturo Garcia over at Raw Story. And the final paragraph, quote, "I'm really saddened for Stephanie and the Chatfields, but I don't feel it has anything to do with my primary race," Twardy told the Detroit News. Twardy is another Republican running against Lee Chatfield for his seat. She also said, Twardy did, that she was not the person threatening to blackmail Chatfield. Is that blackmail? Isn't blackmail usually a term that is reserved for threats to disclose illegal acts, or at least deeply immoral acts? Is the implication there that it would be blackmail to the people who might vote for her husband? That it would be blackmail to the people she goes to church with every time they open the doors? I mean, that word blackmail just leaped off the screen at me. Because I don't think it's blackmail. I don't know if what was done was ethical. But I don't think it was illegal either. Was it? Somebody somewhere apparently was telling the story of what she did. In light of the fact that she's only told her husband and her parents. She later revealed her choice to both her parents and the congressman. Who talked? You know, if this woman had much in the way of conscience, but of course she's an evangelical Christian, and therefore doesn't, she would say, yes, I did, and my heart goes out to any young woman in the same circumstances as I was. And the rights of that young woman must be preserved above all. Because I don't want another young woman to ever go through the process alone and terrified like I did. But you and I both know that will not be the case. She'll probably show up somewhere along the way on the 700 Club or helping to hustle some Mexican Fiesta dinner buckets for Jim Baker and talk about the horrible remorse she feels for that poor little rape baby and how it weren't the baby's fault and how she has prayed on bended knee for God to forgive her for murdering her child. When there was absolutely nothing morally or ethically wrong with the choice that she made. So, yeah, that's it for tonight's Thorn in the Side Thursday. Thanks for joining in, however you did. I look forward to Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. It's been a while since we've had a Friday on the Front Porch, the way things have worked out. And I miss it. And hopefully we'll have a rousing Jim Dandy conversation tomorrow. We'll close the program, about $100 to go in fundraising. Maybe that'll change overnight, I don't know. 5 at a time, 10 at a time, doesn't matter. It's just, well, that's how we keep it all going here. If it doesn't, we'll have a $300 fundraising goal tomorrow. Y'all have a wonderful evening. Thanks for joining in however you do. Thanks for keeping this program afloat. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Sorry for the short program.